We're in the Drashot Aran, page Chaftet in the Shalem edition, Mem Gimel in the Mishor edition, and page Pei in the Musad Rav Kook edition. And the Ran had been describing why prophets have to make signs. And the Ran said that when you have a prophecy that's a private prophecy, like the prophecies that the Avot received, so there we do not have the principle that Hashem does not rescind a prophecy for good. Ordinarily we say a prophecy for good, Hashem doesn't take back. But the Ran said, but when it comes to a personal prophecy, a private prophecy, there's no reason to go with that principle. So, as such, when Hashem gives a prophecy and gives a sign, that's a way of bringing the prophecy to fruition. The prophecy starts coming true, and then Hashem won't take it back. So the signs that Hashem gave for the prophecies for good, or the prophecies for bad, were ways of locking in the prophecy. And the Ran brought this in a discussion as to the fight between Esav and Yaakov, the fight in utero, the idea of Yaakov being born holding on to Esav's heel. And now the Ran continues and says, "Omnam hasiba tivit asher chiva achizat ha'akev lo nida'a." We don't understand what was the natural cause that Yaakov should be holding on to Esav's heel when they're born. But why did they have to have this fight in utero? That Rivka's feeling everything's amok inside. Everything's going wild. The reason for this, says the Ran, was because each one had a nature that was complete opposite of the other one. And they couldn't stand being together in the stomach. Their nature was opposite. Hashem made it that they have completely opposite natures, and this was an unusual thing. The nature is that when a mother forms two children, twins are more similar. Even if they're not identical twins, nonetheless, same parents, same genes. Nature would have it that twins usually are more similar. And here, they were as dissimilar as can be. And that caused a natural occurrence that they would be fighting one another, there would be a lot of ruckus inside her stomach, because their natures were contradictory to one another. The nature of Yaakov and the nature of Esav. But the miracle in it was that two children in one stomach from one parent, from the same identical parents, two twins would have such completely opposing natures. But once that was the case, it was natural for them to have some kind of conflict inside. Whatever that means. Hashem wanted them to be different. For the aforementioned reasons. You see that as they were growing, each one's nature, each one's tendency, each one's actions was in contradiction with the other one. Esav knew how to hunt, v'ish tachbulot. He was a cunning person. If you want to hunt an animal, you have to use cunning. V'ish sadeh. Esav was a man of action. Ohev lanua. He was a man of the field. He loved movement. Yaakov was exactly the opposite. He was a whole person, simple. He didn't know how to use cunning. He didn't know how to outsmart people. Yaakov was simple. What he says is what he means. That's Yaakov. Like Rashi over there explains, that tam means kelibo ken fiv. He tells you what he means. Simple, straight. This is what he has to say. So that's the opposite of Yudea Tzayid, v'yoshev o'alim. Yaakov liked to stay home, liked to stay in his tent. Lo'ev lanua. He didn't need action, he didn't like going around on all these excursions. So Esav and Yaakov, from the time they're young, they're opposites. From the stomach, they're opposites. Gam ha'masim asher hayu b'neihem hayu ra'uyim nesovev b'neihem sinah v'kinah. And also the involvement, the actions that happened between them, also were sources for enmity, for jealousy. Rishona nishal yashar lakach Yaakov b'chorat Esav b'inyan zal me'od tzarich yishuv. The first point is, Yaakov's taking the rights to the firstborn from Esav in a very strange manner, which needs understanding. How does it make sense that Yaakov, who was such a straight shooter, straight, simple guy, how does he go ahead and tell Esav, you want my broth, you want my lentil soup, you give me your rights to the firstborn. How does that fit with the picture of Yaakov? We just said, he's a simple, straight shooter. And if you analyze what happened there, there are many questions in that story. Firstly, it doesn't make sense that a person who's so whole like Yaakov is looking at something that someone else has and he wants what he doesn't have. If he's so whole, why does he want to take something that's not his? It's Esav's. Why does he want to take it from him? To tell his friend, you sell me your lot, your inheritance. And secondly, how could he trick him? How could he do such unfair business practices to take the honorable rights to the firstborn at such a disgraceful, unfair price? Even if Esav in his foolish ways agrees to the deal, Yaakov should have been a straight guy. Yaakov shouldn't have tricked him. He shouldn't have made such an unfair business deal. He should have told him, you know, this isn't a fair deal. You're giving me a lot for a little. Even if we would assume that the rights to the firstborn were not monetary rights, that wasn't the discussion there. Even if we would say something which the Ran is not saying and the Rishonim don't say, the Ran says, even if we would say that before the Torah, the firstborn did not get a double portion. Many Rishonim write that there were many concepts that predated the Torah. You had concepts like Yibum, like that a Bechor gets double the amount, and other concepts that existed, and the Torah came and said, this is the right way to do them. The Torah didn't invent them. Now, we discussed in other classes how could concepts predate the Torah, and we said they stemmed from Hashem, and we discussed the prophets that predated the Torah and gave moral ways of life, and they might have instituted these things. But at the end of the day, Rishonim say it could be that you'll find concepts that predated the Torah, and the Torah said this is the right way to enact those concepts. So even if you won't say that, says the Ran, even if you'll say that before the Torah, the firstborn did not get a double portion in the inheritance, and all it meant was who would honor whom, that selling the rights to the firstborn, everyone respected him, it meant I get that respect, that the younger one would honor the older one, it still doesn't seem to make sense that Yaakov will tell Esav, for a meal, for a bowl of lentil soup, give me all the honor that I'm supposed to give you for the rest of the life. No, that doesn't make sense. And even if we'll go with those commentaries that say that Yaakov didn't give him a mere bowl of soup, but rather, the Torah doesn't bother mentioning, but Yaakov gave him a lot of money for these rights. Still, difficult. How did this all come to be? The guy walks in from the field, says, give me some soup. He says, give me the rights to the firstborn. Doesn't sound like such a whole guy. We're just short on time. So after class, we'll talk, okay? ביניהם מעורר עשיו מצד יעקב, ייתן אליו כבודו בחסף מלא, אבל כשיבוא עשיו מצידו עייף, מבקש ממנו אוכל להשיב נפשו, ושעל זה יתעורר עשיו לצוד את פחותו לקחתו, זה מאוד צריך יישוב. He says, the way you do normal business practices is that Yaakov wants the rights to the firstborn and he's willing to pay a lot of money, so then he sends a messenger, and he tells him, you know, I'm interested in buying. And he gets a real estate agent, he gets a lawyer, he gets people to set up a right contract between him and him. He doesn't catch his brother off guard when his brother comes in off of the field. His brother says, I'm hungry, can you give me some of the soup? And he says, sure, sell me the rights to the firstborn. Doesn't smell right. So the Ran says, even if you'll tell me Yaakov paid a lot of money, how does this fit with the description of Yaakov? So we have some excellent questions. And Bezrat Hashem, next week we'll start exploring the potential answers.